Well, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Chris Murphy, United States Senator from Connecticut. I want to welcome all of you. There are many advocates, many people who have spent their lifetime working on improving mental health care in this country, represented in the office here, in the audience here today. My job is just to kick this off. You'll hear from me in a few moments, but we are joined here today by the bipartisan leadership that has made this legislation, which will be a breakthrough to millions of patients with mental illness across the country, reality. We're joined here by the leadership that's made the 21st Century Cures Act, which will lead to medical breakthroughs for millions of Americans, a reality. I want to say thank you to all of those that are assembled here. They're each going to be able to say a few words. We're going to particularly focus on the mental health legislation that is part of this legislation. But to kick things off, let me introduce Senator Lamar Alexander, who from day one has been a friend to Senator Cassidy and I, helping us to understand how to move this legislation through the process, and was, of course, one of the key supporters in making sure that it was included in the 21st Century Cures Act.
Thank you, Chris. Senator Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, has said that the legislation that we're voting in the Senate on this afternoon at 5:30 is the most important piece of legislation that Congress will deal with this year. And one reason it is because it includes the most important reforms to mental health programs in more than a decade. Mm-hmm. My role as chairman of the Senate Health Committee is to try to create an environment in which that can happen more easily in the Senate. And while Chairman Upton and Congressman Murphy and Johnson in the House have played a massive role in this, and they'll have a chance to talk about that more later, I want especially to mention the three senators. Senator Cornyn, who will speak next, is our second-ranking Republican in the Senate, and his leadership has helped make sure that this bill is a part of what we're voting on today. And all of you know, having watched this process, how important that can be. Senator Cassidy and Senator Murphy are relatively new to the Senate, but no two senators have shown more skill and more leadership in legislation than they have. They've taken a difficult issue, they've put three bills together, they've navigated some very tricky issues, and they've taken a very important piece of legislation that provides better treatment for one out of five Americans who need help with mental illness. And I couldn't be prouder of both of them, as well as Senator Cornyn. So I especially salute these two members of the Health Committee, one Democrat, one Republican, and the Republican whip, Senator Cornyn, for their leadership in the Senate in helping to take a bill that passed the House, and they'll talk more about that, put it together, bring it through the process, and put it on the floor. So I'm proud now to hand this off to Senator John Cornyn of Texas, the Republican whip, and let him talk about the piece of legislation that is the most important piece of legislation that Congress will be voting on this year.
Well, as usual, Senator Alexander likes to give credit to other people when the fact of the matter is this bill wouldn't be where it is without his leadership. If you want to get things done in the Senate, go see Lamar Alexander. And of course, Tim Murphy's a hard guy to say no to. And he's been the little engine that could in all of this. And of course, Lamar mentioned Dr. Cassidy and Chris Murphy in the Senate, along with Chairman Upton, Eddie Bernice Johnson in the House, and so many people who've come together to make this possible. My particular concern, beyond the overarching concerns, is that our criminal justice system has for too long treated people with mental illness as people to be warehoused in our jails, and whose illness, left untreated, will make sure that their illness gets worse, not better. and create a turnstile through which they will come back time and time again to our criminal justice system, living on our streets as homeless individuals or in our emergency rooms, never getting the sort of treatment they need in order to get turn their lives around. My particular example that I always think of when it comes to what sort of things are possible, I think of San Antonio, Bexar County, Texas, which is my hometown, which has done a remarkable job working with mental health professionals, law enforcement, and others to kind of come up with a program that actually delivers on what we all hope, which is where people can get the help they need, and instead of just being put away in a jail cell just to get sicker and sicker. But this bill also provides tools for families, because as Senator Alexander said, every family in America is touched one way or another by the scourge of mental illness. And sometimes family members need additional tools to help their loved one get the treatment they need and to get better. And things like assisted outpatient treatment, which provide another alternative to involuntary commitment, which isn't a permanent solution at all, but thanks to the great work that's been done in the pharmaceutical industry to provide drugs that help people regain control of their lives and get back living productive lives, there's a lot to be proud of in this legislation. But let me just say, I appreciate Senator Alexander, Senator Murray of the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee working across committee structures. Sometimes that can be a death knell. Not to mention working across the chamber to try to get this done. But this is a great day, not just for the Senate and the Congress, but mainly for the families and the people who suffer from mental illness in America to help us turn this ship around and get on the right path. Thank you.
We're going to be doing a lot of thanking each other today, but it does bear repeating here. John has been a champion for the specific legislation as part of this package that will help unlock opportunity for people with mental illness in the criminal justice system. But we simply wouldn't be standing here today if it wasn't for John's commitment to getting this entire package through. And I want to thank him specifically. And I want to add my thanks to Patty Murray as well. She wasn't able to be here today. But there is no better team in the United States Senate than Lamar Alexander and Patty Murray. And they have made this day possible, albeit with a big boost from our colleagues in the House that are here. Listen, this is impactful, meaningful legislation. This is a bill that is going to start putting a priority on prevention rather than simply on crisis intervention. This is legislation that's going to give new tools to those families that are in crisis. It's going to clarify that parents can be full partners in the care of their adult loved ones who are suffering from mental illness. Maybe most importantly to me, it's going to put us back on a pathway to making good on the promise that we made when we passed the Mental Health Parity Act, when we told people that you were going to be treated the same in the medical system, whether you have a physical illness, a broken leg, or you have a mental illness, broken neurons in your brain. And this legislation builds upon the Mental Health Parity Act to, I think, in the end, make sure that more treatment than ever before is authorized by insurance companies for people that are in need. But maybe more than anything else, this legislation shows that there's really nothing political about the issue of treating people with mental illness. There are a lot of partisan fights here. There are a lot of places where Democrats line up on one side and Republicans line up on the other side. And we acknowledge there's still a lot of work to do. We acknowledge that this is a light, right? A big bright light for people with serious mental illness. And they see it now. But I think the biggest breakthrough here is that for the first time since the passage of the Mental Health Parity Act, we've been able to bring together progressive Democrats like myself and conservative Republicans like Senator Cornyn, Senator Cassidy, and we've been able to show that bipartisanship is alive and well when it comes to helping people in need, people who have been abused by a broken mental health system for too long. And maybe as important as the reforms in this bill are, the point forward to future changes that we can make with this coalition that we've built maybe is going to be the most important legacy of this legislation. None of it would be possible without each and every one of the people standing here today. We were unashamed in borrowing most of our legislation from Tim Murphy. In the darkness for a long time, and we were glad to join with him as partners. But as I turn the microphone over to Senator Cassidy, let me just tell you what a joy it's been to work with him. To the extent we've been able to create a foundation here devoid of politics and full of policy, it's because that's exactly the approach that Senator Cassidy brings to everything he works on here. And we have not only become, I think, good working partners as a result of this legislation, but we've become very, very good friends as well. So let me introduce you to Senator Bill Cassidy.
Yeah, Senator, the first press conference, but I think we got this Irish thing going on. And if I would start with my thanks, it would be with Tim Murphy. No, it would start with Chairman Upton. Because when he and I served on energy and commerce, and we both had a passion, he with far more knowledge, but both a passion regarding mental health reform, it was our chairman, Mr. Upton, who created that pathway. And as we worked together, then I came over here, we continued to work together, but then Chris reached out to me, and it became a partnership. I didn't really know Eddie Bernice Johnson until we had a conference on, the four of us, on how it was going politically. And we were taking a little bit of incoming. And Eddie Bernice Johnson said, listen, I'm a former psychiatric nurse. And she was just taking that incoming, defending the product that she and Tim Murphy were working on, and I knew we had a partner. If I would continue my thanks, I would again now extend it, as others have, to John Cornyn. We just had that seasoned hand of a guy that counts votes. That works. And Lamar Alexander, a guy that used to count votes, got sick of it. But now knows how to work with others to make something happen. But the far more appropriate place to give thanks would be to all those patients that volunteered their story to give unction to what we're doing. I noticed when I went back to Louisiana, if I had a town hall meeting in the lower ninth ward, a community known as Prosperous. And I would speak about how every one of us is affected by mental health. Every head would nod, yes. And if I had a town hall meeting in a prosperous suburb with folks coming, you know, sometimes of great wealth, and mentioned the tragedy of untreated but recognized mental health, every head would nod, yes. It cuts across everything because it is us. And this bill is about us because all of us, as Lamar Alexander pointed out, are affected. Thank you all for being here. I will note, there are far more of people who are not reporters at a press conference. And no offense against the professionals who are in the press, but I will say it is a measure of the importance of this to the average American that you are here. And I thank you too. And I love it.
Thank you. I'm Fred Upton, and as you will hear, every one of us is very passionate about this issue. And we knew from the beginning that we were going to have to branch out, and that's why we really required the community, asked the community to step out with us to make sure that, in fact, it was going to be bipartisan and it would be something meaningful that at the end of the day we knew that we really made a difference. Eddie Bernice Johnson was a great partner for us for just a host of reasons. Woo. This is not the only issue that she cares about, and it showed. Tim Murphy was once the lone voice in the wilderness, and it was a struggle to get where we are today, but we did it on a great glide path. And it started with the longest markup I've ever endured. And we did it with the knowledge that we wanted to get people's attention. that yes, it was going to be messy, it was going to be bloody, people were going to be yelling at each other, but then they would know that we were serious. It was an effort last year, and we got their attention. And Tim Murphy did an incredible job as we then pulled members together on our committee. And if you follow the Energy and Commerce Committee, you know that we are reflective of the whole House. We have the Rush Limbaughs and those to the right. We have the Elizabeth Warrens and those to the right. We do.
Yes, you do.
But at the end of the day, the vote in committee and full committee was 53-0. And with that vote, we knew that not only did we have the attention of the whole House because of the work that Eddie Bernice and Tim Murphy did, but the Speaker and our leadership, but also the Senate. And I gotta say, there is not a better partner for me to work with than Lamar Alexander and his team. Every member of that help committee, every member of that committee, and Patty Murray, I'm sorry she's not here, but she carries a heavy axe as well. We did it. And just as it is for us, who knew that this was so important, we also knew that the clock was ticking. And we're at the end. And somehow we had to fashion this so that we could get it to the president's desk where we knew that he would sign it. And we did it. We really did. Mm-hmm. And that vote this afternoon at 5:30 will really be critical because we are all passionate about this. And we all know folks at home who are as deeply committed as we are. And we now have a little angel. He's got a little angel halo on his head with him and John and Chris and Eddie Bernice. But it's done. We got it done. And we're going to make it. The last thing that I want to say is we also had an administration that wanted to work with us. Joe Biden, President Obama, if you might have noticed that President Obama used it in his Saturday address. He wants to sign it as soon as we get it down there. Yes. And we're going to give him that opportunity. Thank you all for being here.
Well, we're here. Woo! There's times that Chris Murphy and I would first start talking about this and a bunch of dinner. We paid our own way. Dr. Cassidy and I would lament over saying when Eddie Bernice and I went for this, you don't want to mess with her if you're on the wrong side. She's too strong and bleak. But I remember the first time we had meetings in Fred's office about this. We can get it done. We've got to do it this way. And it was so hard throughout this whole process because of stories I know from you. When Senator Cornyn and Senator Alexander got involved, I knew we had something rolling here. And then they worked some of these things out, added on to some tremendous legislation that Fred Upton's been working on for years. The 20% Free Cures, an awesome bill, which will lead to a lot of cures. And out of the thousands and thousands of diseases for which there is no cure, to really work towards treatments and get them to people ahead of time, early on in their lives. And part of that family is you. Outside this door, there's a petition. It's a shortened version with 2,800 signatures. We had millions of social media postings, as many of you. And I met those of you who have lost a loved one, those of you who have a loved one sitting in a jail cell, perhaps without much hope of getting out. And the key is that somewhere along the way, and I don't even know who it was anymore, but someone, they'd send us T-shirts, they'd send us these buttons that says treatment before tragedy. And that became our, that became our mantra. This shouldn't that be what we're doing here. This is, sadly for some afternoon, Chris Murphy's district, but it could happen to anybody's 4th anniversary coming up of Sandy Hook. Mm-hmm. And It was from the time that I met with the Sandy Hook family members, and they gave me the photos of their kids and their spouses. I said, I'm keeping these. I put them on the table in my office, and every single day in my office, I looked at them. And I was saying, I'm going to keep that promise, that we wouldn't continue to see these tragedies rack up. Now, unfortunately, there's 350,000 deaths last year in this country related to mental illness. I mean, suicides and homicides and substance abuse deaths, and the people who tend to die 10 to 25 years sooner because of medical complications related to their mental illness, far too many. And I knew sometimes members would say, hey, can we put this off till next year? We'll put this off to another day. I said, that's 959 deaths a day, and the answer is no. And it was this incredible energy, this force behind me that really pushed this through, as if this in this relay race, we're getting to the final mile of a marathon. And to watch what happened when, in particular, the leadership in the House of Senate got together and said, make this happen. This was Lamar and Fred and John, and the work that was done. This is big in terms of what it does. And some have called it the biggest change in mental illness since perhaps Kennedy signed his legislation, because now we will have an assistant secretary of mental health and substance use, someone to organize these 112 federal agencies, put funding in there to get more psychiatrists and psychologists and social workers, because we have an incredible shortage. Half the counties in America, you don't have someone who can treat mental illness. And the issue is done for early childhood education, for early intervention, for the prevention aspects, for getting things together. This is major. We still have to go on with the appropriation, but it comes down to this. After all this work, and after all the tears, and sometimes anger, and after all the suffering, and all the organizations that have come together to be part of this, all the advocates, know that those times when you felt like an orphan, those times you felt alone and no one was there to listen, the times you were ready to give up yourself and so many families had given up, understand that these people up here and the members of the House and Senate listened. And they'll continue listening and move forward. And from the onset, I said, where there is no help, there is no hope. Mm-hmm. Know this now. There is help, and there is hope.
Acknowledge my colleagues here, the senators. We could not have done this without a good teamwork. And you know, this is the epitome of our institution. Mm-hmm. When we can come together and pass a major piece of legislation that impacts every life, working together across party lines. Whether you're liberal or conservative, I'm beginning to wonder what I am. But my senator from Texas, I'm grateful because he kept giving me the word that it was going to happen, and he proved to me that it did happen. So thanks to all of you. In October, I visited with my governor of Texas on this very issue. And he has given me word that we have a green light to work in Texas on this issue. I work also with the president of the Southwest Medical School in Dallas. This is an issue in mental health, that not a single family is without someone that needs mental health attention. We continue to fill our jails and our prisons when we neglect this area. It is expensive. It's very expensive to do it, and that's one of the reasons why it's so difficult to make up our minds to do something about it. But it's even more expensive to ignore it. And you know, I'm very grateful today. It is not a perfect bill, but you know what else? We're not perfect. We come together and do the best we can. And most of the time, it's good for the people. And I'm very, very pleased to join the group today because I really do believe that the awareness and even the knowledge of having some solution, somewhere to call. I recently established a hotline in the Dallas area after the police shootings where people can call when there's someone in their family that's acting a little different. We are so grateful to be here. This is good for America. All of us can think of many, many situations that perhaps could have been avoided if we had had this bill passed. It is not a perfect bill, as nothing else we do is perfect here, because we represent a lot of imperfect people. We represent America. But we are going to continue to work. We're grateful for where we are, and I know that we'll see a difference. And I want to thank all of the groups that stayed with us. There were times when I did wonder whether we're going to really get to this point. But when you got a partner like Congressman Murphy, who did not give up, he kept encouraging me, and I kept encouraging him. And I'm grateful to all of you for not giving up and making sure that we got to this moment. I thank you so very much. Be in touch.
We are celebrating, but as the whip will remind us, we still have a vote tonight. So we still need you to press your case to get as good a vote as possible this evening. We obviously would be here if we didn't feel good about it, but we still need all the help we can get over the next couple hours. So I know we'd be happy to take a couple questions if there are any questions from the press. You guys are easy. Dan?
If you and maybe Congressman Murphy could talk a little bit about the assisted outpatient treatment issue. I heard perhaps from Senator Cornyn that it was in. I didn't think it was, but if you can kind of clarify, and just maybe the two Murphys could talk a little bit about back and forth on that issue.
Twins separated at birth.
the final resolution.
Sure. So in an earlier bill, it was funded for some millions. We put more millions into this. And so it enables states that choose to apply for grants. I think $13 million of grants went out this fiscal year. Well, it's last fiscal year already distributed. And it's out there. Well, we recognize that that, along with assertive community treatment, which is a program that wraps services around the assisted outpatient treatment is where there is a requirement through a legal process whereby the person's rights are protected to make sure they stay in treatment if they have a risk for violence and incarceration, et cetera. It isn't just anybody. It's a particular group. And out of New York State, they did some of the studies that showed reduced incarceration, reduced arrest, reduced homelessness, and improved satisfaction of the consumers. So it is out there. Now, will that take care of every state and every community? No. But the idea is with this legislation, this bill, to get communities to think that just you cannot arrest your way out of this problem. And with somewhere between 50, 60, 70% of people who are in prisons and local jails having a mental health problem, and the fact that 80% of them don't get help while they're in jail, it makes much more sense to make sure they're getting the services in the community, because community outpatient treatment is about 20 times cheaper than incarceration. So we want to see communities move forward. This is our financial incentive for states to do it. The states and communities will be much better off if they continue to provide those services for people, too.
I just had to, you know, this issue clearly created a lot of debate here in Washington and across the country, and it's an example of where compromise happens to make this bill possible. There is the reauthorization of funding in this bill for states that want to move forward with these kind of programs, but it remains up to each state. There's no penalty for states that choose not to adopt these laws. Of course, Connecticut is one of the states that doesn't, one of a small minority of states that doesn't have an assisted outpatient law on the books. And so I think we got to a place where we were all comfortable, where states that wanted to move forward with these programs would get some help from the federal government, but states that chose to keep their law as is wouldn't be penalized for it.
Can I just make a quick point along those lines? The federal government funds state and local law enforcement to the tune of about $2 billion a year. And so what happens is these are grants that could be applied for through the Department of Justice to pilot these programs like assisted outpatient treatment. I didn't mention his name earlier, but Pete Early, who many of you know, wrote a book that really changed the way I looked at this issue called Crazy, talking about the system, not a person, not a condition, not a diagnosis, but the system. And just he, among other things, impressed me with the need for families have more tools available to them to help their loved ones comply with their doctor's orders and maintain their meds and that sort of thing, how that is part of the puzzle.
Could you both, the two Murphys, please address the IMND, the IMD exclusion, and you were talking about the waivers in the states for, or I've heard about this, it's not going to be referred back to the states for waivers. I'm not clear whether or not these waivers already exist, they're going to be created, or how is the IMND, the 30-day limit going to be held?
It's 15 days within a 30-day period, within a month period. So this is something we basically have put into statute, a policy that CMS has started to work on. It's one of those areas, I say, we didn't get everything we needed, but we needed everything we got. I would much rather be flexibility that's based upon the patient's individual needs. Much of this is a cost factor. And so we're seeing as states adopt this, as states work on this, and as CMS evaluates this, I think they'll actually see cost savings when they can get people treatment and they say, okay, your time's up, you gotta go. And it's far less expensive to have someone in a psychiatric bed than it is in an emergency room by multiple factors here. So this area will have to come back and revisit it and see how we progress in this, but I'm confident we'll see some positive progress.
And I would say there is, but you know, we didn't get as far on this issue as we would have liked. It was costed out at a very large number. But there is bipartisan agreement in the Senate that we need to move on this. Senator Hatch had a hearing of the Finance Committee earlier this year. He is personally committed to working on this issue moving forward. And, I think we'll be, I meant what I said earlier. You know, we didn't get everything we wanted, but we showed that there is a bipartisan working group that can take the next step, and I think that this would be one of the logical places we want to go.
And let me just speak briefly, not so much about this, but about going forward. In my previous life as a physician, I worked in a hospital for the uninsured that saw inmates, and I ran clinics in prisons. Now, Tim Murphy has a great quote. We traded the hospital bed for the prison cell, the park bench, and the morgue. And every time you incarcerate somebody, that's $30,000 to $50,000 per year. So I do think we'll find savings as we expand the number of psychiatric beds when it shows, as I would predict, that they do not end up in the jail cell, the park bench, or the morgue.
The biggest problem when it comes to the HIPAA laws is that they are badly misunderstood. The existing HIPAA laws allow for providers to be able to share information with parents of adult patients if it's in the best interests of that patient. And many physicians have many physicians have operated under the assumption that there is an outright ban on the sharing of that information. And so at the heart of what we've done here is to provide new resources to tell physicians what the law really is, and to clarify the fact that you have the ability to share this information today. I would argue this is a place where, you know, we may still have to look to work down the line if our education campaign doesn't work. We had talked about something a little bit more robust and both of our legislation that went through the House and the Senate. But we're going to give this a try. And I think if we can put some real resources into clarifying the existing standard and taking some of the fear out of the transmission of that information, we'll get a lot better care for patients and we'll get a lot more parents empowered.
Again, if I could speak to that, we had a hearing when I was in ENC with Tim. We had the experts on HIPAA. And the experts started to disagree with each other as to what it meant. I'm thinking we have a confusion of experts. Now imagine for the emergency room physician, and I pose this to the panel, and you've got five people waiting to be seen. It's 3 a.m, and you're supposed to figure out what you can tell somebody. Your default is no. That's just the way it works, speaking as a physician. And we can't blame her. She's trying to do the best she can. So I think one of the things we've done with this is force those experts to come to clarity. And with that, begin to push out those legal education to the hospital attorney, who will then be a resource for the ER doc working at 3 in the morning with 5 people lined up needing to know what to do. Ultimately, we need to help her, and I think this is a process that begins to do that.
Can you want to comment on that, too? This goes in the category of we got everything we needed, or we didn't get everything we needed, but we got everything
we needed. We needed everything we got.
You're a Rolling Stones song.
But if you try sometime. The HIPAA laws are confusing. You do have a long way to go. Because I know that, you know, if someone is begging a judge or someone else, can you tell me where my son is? Or someone saying, a nurse, can you tell me what I'm supposed to do? Or a daughter in the hospital 2 a.m. with a suicide attempt. She says, I promise I won't do it again. They let it go, and the family doesn't even know. Some way we have to get these things done. I know there's a great deal of confusion. There's thousands and thousands of queries out there in terms of getting HHS to deal with this. And I hope as we proceed with this that HHS will listen a lot to providers and families and consumers and talk about this. The snag comes not in those who are chronically incapacitated, because then you go for a guardianship, are not those who move out of times of lucidity and problems, because those they can do an advanced directive. It is those who are in the throes of deep psychosis and delusional behavior. Or because of that, they say, don't tell my father because he works for the FBI and he's planted things in my brain, or don't tell my mother because she's this, while that person is suffering another illness. I mean, 75% of people with a severe mental illness have another chronic illness. 50% have at least 2, 3, a third have at least 3. And it's cancer, diabetes, lung disease, heart disease, infectious disease. And we've seen too many times where a person does die early because the family members, who can be great partners, are not even told what medication, whether the problems are, when is the next appointment, or why they need to see an endocrinologist. So we're hoping HHS will work with us and really solve that problem so physicians are not left in the lurch about knowing that. We know that a physician can say, I can't tell you anything about John Doe's case, but if you want to tell me something, I'm here to listen. And they can listen. And many times I say, I can't talk to anybody. And that's absolutely false, and that education campaign will help. Senator Murphy and I were just talking. Look, we know we have to readdress this, and we'll be watching very carefully. I'm sure there'll be more hearings goes on. The good news, we have the attention of Congress understanding this. It's another area where we speak up. Maybe one more question.
Good afternoon. Thank you all for what you're doing. As a first person of experience on what not having Laura's Law and AOT in your county, I'm from San Bernardino County, California, firsthand knowledge of what that does to people, I'm just encouraged by your ability and willingness to readdress the need of AOT and Laura's Law in all states, in all counties. You know, I'm in a situation in my county where I'm trying to encourage San Bernardino to take upon this benefit. And they're telling me that they have what they need in place, and that they feel that what's in place is working. And obviously, if it was working, I would have never suffered the tragedy that my family has suffered. So I'm encouraged by the ability to readjust a lot of these things that we didn't get, and I'm really encouraged by your efforts and motivation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.